I'm Montse Alvarado. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, we continue our coverage of the Holy Father's passing. Looking ahead, the Vatican sets the date for the funeral of Pope Francis as cardinals arrive to help plan for what's next. Religious freedom. The Supreme Court hears oral argument in a case involving LGBTQ-themed books in some Maryland public schools. Economic outlook. The International Monetary Fund downgrades global growth outlooks in the face of tariffs. What it could mean for you. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, a new report is shedding light on the final hours of Pope Francis. Among his last words was a thank you to his personal health care assistant. The Holy Father said, "Thank you for bringing me back to the square," after the assistant encouraged him on Sunday to take a ride in the Pope Mobile. Soon after the Urbi et Orbi message, the Holy Father rested in the afternoon and had a quiet Easter dinner. At dawn, he suddenly fell ill and died. His appearance to pilgrims was a meaningful surprise to the 50,000 faithful gathered in St. Peter's Square. Right now, the body of Pope Francis is lying in state in the chapel of Casa Santa Marta, where he has been living for the past 12 years. Tomorrow, the coffin will be moved to St. Peter's Basilica for the faithful to say their final goodbyes. The Vatican also announced this morning that the funeral mass will take place on Saturday, kicking off the 9 days of mourning known as the Novem Dialis, and then the final funeral mass will become celebrated by cardinals, bishops, and priests from across the globe. EWTN Vatican journalist Valentina Di Donato has more.
After the news of Pope Francis's sudden passing on Easter Monday, the Vatican has now released the first images of the Pope lying in state in Casa Santa Marta, wearing a white mitre, red chasuble, a rosary in his hands. It's a somber moment for the Church and the faithful, who here in St. Peter's Square remember the legacy of Pope Francis in life and how he impacted and moved the Church.
The one thing that I liked about him is that he kind of, well, he moved away from that idea of church showing richness and money, and so he was, like, let's say, a pope of the people. So I hope we can go towards that direction, moving on.
For me, I remember in particular an experience I had with him. One day I had the chance to greet him in person. I told him I was a priest, a missionary working in Brazil, and I said, "Holy Father, give me some advice." He looked at me and said, "Be merciful." That was the message he gave to all of us priests, that in confession we should forgive everything and be full of mercy.
On Wednesday morning, Pope Francis's body will be taken into St. Peter's Basilica in a procession led by cardinals, letting the faithful pay their final respects for the first Latin American pope. The funeral for Pope Francis will then take place on Saturday, April 26th, in St. Peter's Square at 10 a.m. Heads of state from around the globe will attend. U.S. President Donald Trump has said he would be flying into Rome for the service with the First Lady, Melania Trump. In St. Peter's Square, where the faithful have been gathering since the announcement of the Pope's death, a sense of unity for the loss of the Pope, who emphasized a more fraternal world, highlighting humanity's interconnectedness and the need to respond to the most daunting social challenges.
Honestly, I didn't expect to find myself in Rome at the time of Pope Francis's death. But beyond the sadness, I really believe we are part of world history. Being here at such a deeply sorrowful moment, this really is something to remember for the rest of one's life.
In the Pope's final testament released on Monday, he especially requested to be buried in Rome's Basilica of St. Mary Major and not in St. Peter's. A shift from recent tradition, very much in line with Pope Francis, with the simplest of tombs bearing only the inscription of his papal name in Latin, Franciscus. In Rome, Valentina Di Donato, EWTN News Nightly.
For more, we're joined by Father Patrick Mary Briscoe, editor of our Sunday Visitor magazine, and who will also be joining EWTN's coverage. Father Briscoe, we're watching everyone wrestle with this very somber moment in the sede vacante life of the church. We don't have a pope, and we're still mourning the Holy Father until the funeral, which was announced to be this Saturday, early in the morning on Saturday. It was announced early this morning. Tell us about this time period. How are we counting the days? How are we supposed to be living this moment?
Monse, it first hit me that we're entering into the sede vacante today as I was reviewing the writings of Pope Francis yesterday. I was just filled with sorrow for the loss of our Pope, which is how Catholics always feel when we lose our Holy Father. But today I realized that we were now really shepherdless, and I really felt it today when I was looking around the Vatican website and saw sede vacante written everywhere. So we've entered this period of mourning properly, where we're thanking God, where we're giving gratitude to God for the Petrine ministry of Pope Francis. So his body will lie in state on beginning Wednesday in St. Peter's Basilica. I plan to be among the thousands of faithful who will file past to pay our respects to the late pontiff. Then his funeral, of course, will be Saturday morning, and then begin what we call the Novenialis, the 9 days of mourning and prayer, where masses will be offered, suffrages offered in honor of Pope Francis and praying for his peaceful repose. It's not until we really move through this phase of mourning, which includes, again, our gratitude for Pope Francis' service in the Petrine ministry, that we begin to think about the conclave. So the conclave has to take place within a certain number of days after Pope Francis' death, and we'll begin to look forward to that once we're done with this phase of mourning.
That's exactly right. So that's, I think, the piece that's most confusing for people when they think about when does the countdown begin. So the first day of these 9 days of mourning is really that moment of the funeral. That's the first mass. There'll be masses that evening at 5 p.m., which we know will be covered by EWTN. Father Briscoe, when you were really supposed to be on your way to Rome for a jubilee and for the canonization of Carlo Acutis, tell us, what will you hope, or what do you think you will encounter when you land?
I have my buddy here with me, you know, traveling with Carlo. I love to show him off. I never leave without a holy card of him. I was looking so forward to the canonization, but I think one thing that's beautiful, we are very beautiful. God designs all these things in his providence. But I think what's very beautiful is that all of those young people who are planning to go for the Jubilee of Young People, for adolescents, as the Vatican's been calling it, really teenagers, all the young people that were going for this Jubilee will now have the opportunity to celebrate the life of Pope Francis. And I think this is so beautiful because, of course, one of the great themes of Pope Francis' pontificate is that our culture has a tendency to disregard the elderly. And here we have this last great teaching of our pontiff, with all of these young people coming together now, not to celebrate another young person, but to celebrate the life of Pope Francis, our spiritual father.
But also an 88-year-old man. And I think that's going to be an incredible juxtaposition. You wanted to celebrate the life of the first millennial saint, and instead you're celebrating the life of the Holy Father, who was obviously elderly and infirm and would have qualified for what he called the throwaway culture. Father Briscoe, we're so grateful for you, and we wish you very safe travels.
Thank you so much. Looking forward to discussing many more things with you in these days, Monse.
Absolutely. God bless you. Today, there are masses, prayers, and tributes to Pope Francis worldwide. The faithful are mourning the Holy Father in very different ways. EWTN News contributor Julia Convery has more.
In Thailand, Bangkok's Archbishop led a requiem mass for Pope Francis. In attendance, the Pope's second cousin, Sister Anna Rosa Sivori, who served as the Pope's translator during his visit to Thailand in 2019.
I never expected such a news so suddenly. So I asked God to take him to heaven, and from heaven he will bless us like when he was on the earth.
In war-torn Myanmar, hundreds gathered at the country's biggest church in Yangon for a memorial mass. The Holy Father was the only sitting pope ever to visit the country. Taipei saw the faithful paying tribute at a memorial service for Pope Francis, while Catholics mourned the Holy Father in Bethlehem.
He was our pope, not just our pope. He was our brother, our friend, our dear friend for Bethlehem.
In Indonesia, hundreds waited outside the Apostolic Nunciature, praying while waiting to write condolence messages. But the tributes also extended to symbols. In his native country of Argentina, the iconic obelisk in Buenos Aires was lit up with images of the Pope. In Brazil also, the famous Christ the Redeemer statue donned the Holy Father's face. In contrast, the City of Light was shrouded in darkness. The Eiffel Tower's lights were switched off as a symbol of mourning for the pontiff. Meanwhile, thousands of pilgrims in Italy, there for the Jubilee of Teenagers, pray in St. Peter's Basilica, while Italians fly their flags half-mast. Julia Convery, EWTN News Nightly.
And here in the United States, another big day at the U.S. Supreme Court, this time a case dealing with parental rights and religious freedom. The justices are set to decide whether parents can opt out their kids from reading LGBTQ-themed books in public school classrooms if the material conflicts with the family's faith. Correspondent Eric Rosales joins us from outside the Supreme Court with more.
Good evening, Monse. Montgomery County, Maryland parents claim that their children's school district is violating their religious freedom after a federal appeals court ruled in 2024 that parents cannot opt their kids out of public school curriculum with books involving alternative sexuality content. Well, today, they took their case to the nation's highest court.
Are the books just there and no more, or are they actually being taught out of the books?
No, we know that the teachers are required to use the books. When the books were first introduced in August of 2022, the board suggested they be used five times before the end of the year.
The religious freedom legal group Beckett is representing the parents in the case. Senior counsel Eric Baxter says the school district is using these books for kids as young as four.
The board's own principals protested that these books were inappropriate for elementary school kids, that they were dismissive of children with religious beliefs that were contrary, they were shaming toward children. The school teachers were not comfortable teaching the material.
Melissa Persak, a Catholic mother and one of the plaintiffs in the case, says no school district can violate a parent's First Amendment rights.
No parent should have to choose between preserving their religious beliefs and sending their children to public school.
Beckett says the Montgomery County School Board is one of the few to ban notices and opt-outs for parents on sexuality and gender instruction. Outside the court, I spoke with supporters on both sides.
This has brought together people of all faiths and also people who are not religious, who just for basic moral reasons don't want their young children reading sexually explicit books promoting gender ideology.
Our minds and stuff are set maybe by the time we attend 15, we have already made. Why wait until you're 18 to know that other people exist in the world?
Beckett attorneys tell me that they're optimistic the justices will find in their favor. A decision is expected sometime in June. Outside the U.S. Supreme Court, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Harvard University is suing the Trump administration after the White House announced it would freeze more than $2 billion in grants. The Ivy League school's lawsuit called the funding freeze, quote, arbitrary and capricious. The suit claims the school's First Amendment rights and civil rights protections were violated. The Trump administration fired back, saying taxpayer funds are a privilege and Harvard does not meet the requirements to access that privilege. We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly, including economic uncertainty, why the latest word from the International Monetary Fund is raising concern, and how the Trump administration is responding. And EWTN continues to pray for the repose of the soul of Pope Francis. How you can join us in a special way tonight. As President Donald Trump's trade war continues, the White House says the ball is moving in the right direction. But the International Monetary Fund now says U.S. economic growth will come in at just 1.8% this year. That's down sharply from its previous forecast of 2.7%. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen?
Monse, plenty to cover on the tariff front tonight. Stocks finishing very strong today on Wall Street, but the IMF raised the odds of a U.S. recession this year. Meanwhile, earlier today, the press secretary told reporters the Trump administration defends its tariff position.
We're doing very well in respect to a potential trade deal with China. As I mentioned, there have now been 18 proposals in more than 100 countries around the world who are wanting to make a deal with the United States of America.
Meanwhile, overseas, Vice President J.D. Vance, on a four-day tour of India, delivers remarks at the Rajasthan International Center.
Now, I believe that our nations have much to offer one another, and that's why we come to you as partners looking to strengthen our relationship.
New Delhi looks to avoid American tariffs and strengthen ties with the Trump administration. Both nations make incremental progress on negotiations for a bilateral trade deal by fall. Vance said today he brings a simple message from the Trump administration.
Our administration seeks trade partners on the basis of fairness and of shared national interests.
Back in Washington, D.C., the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, says the U.S. and global economies will likely slow significantly in the wake of President Trump's tariffs, slashing its forecast for global economic growth.
The landscape has changed since our last World Economic Outlook update in January. We're entering a new era as the global economic system that has operated for the last 80 years is being reset.
The IMF says smaller economies have more resilience now than 5 years ago, before the pandemic, but issues remain.
It seems like that, you know, this is going to be a challenging period, and uncertainty, commodity channels are both going to weigh on economies for emerging markets.
And back in the press briefing room, Levitt also saying,
thanks to President Trump's America First economic approach, investments continue to pour into our country. Swiss pharmaceuticals company announced they will be investing $50 billion in the United States over the next 5 years, creating 12,000 new quality jobs.
Also tonight, U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent says the tariff showdown with China is unsustainable, and he expects a de-escalation in the trade war between the world's two largest economies. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Thanks so much, Owen. As we mentioned, the International Monetary Fund is painting a fairly grim picture of the global economy, adding that the two largest economies, the United States and China, are weakening. We turn now to Chris Markowski, host of the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast and founder of Markowski Investments. Chris, it's great to have you back. First off, what's your reaction to the IMF forecast? Do you agree with those numbers and projections?
Well, I mean, they're giving their best guess, but without a doubt, I feel that the economy is going to slow significantly. You know, we've seen what's happened with the stock market. Put that aside. Yesterday, Walmart, Home Depot, Lowe's, they all got to have Target. They got to have a meeting with the president. But the real lifeblood of this country, quite frankly, and I'm biased because many of these businesses are my clients, are small business owners. They're not getting a trip to the Oval Office. And their costs have gone through the roof, and they're having to stop, and they're having to pay attention to the orders that are coming in, and it's making it very difficult. And when you have that whole sector of the economy, small businesses that are hit by these tariffs, and they can't get the type of deals and carve-outs that these big businesses can, that most certainly is problematic.
That's important for the U.S. economy for sure, since we rely on that small business mind. So if you see this downturn for the U.S. and global economies, what impact are we going to see on consumers here in the United States?
Well, we're starting to see it already. There's already the signs right now where you're hearing things where, okay, nail salons aren't doing as much business. Hair salons, they're cutting back here and there. You're already seeing it in real estate where people are canceling purchases for homes. There's a myriad of things. When you're as unsettled as we are in such a short period of time, you go from, you know, one type of an economy and there's going to be a reset. People get disturbed and then they keep their wallet close in a situation like that. In many respects, based upon how things are going, it's almost like a COVID type of an economy where you're worried about stops in certain areas and certain businesses. And we don't want to see that. Again, today, okay, a little glimmer of hope today with some of the chit-chat coming out of the White House with Bessent saying, hey, maybe we're going to work something out with China. We've been hearing about these trade deals that are supposed to be coming down the pike. I would just like to see them sooner rather than later.
Right. Well, the market loves stability. Really quickly, the market did rise today and recovered some of the losses from a difficult Monday inside that sudden surge. What do you see playing out? What do you see going from this?
until we get an all clear sign, I continue to see the type of volatility we have, and I don't like it a bit. A lot of people kind of brush it off, and many other news outlets, oh, it's no big deal. You can't say that to somebody that's close to retirement, that wasn't expecting any of this. This is a pretty good hit. Again, you have to deal with it. It's part of being in the market. It's part of investing, and you're going to have to work your way through. But we're already seeing cracks in pension funds that are down billions of dollars because of this. So, like I said, the sooner that this can, we can get some clarity, in regards to what's going to be happening moving forward, expect more of this.
Well, we're all looking for that clarity. Thank you so much, Chris Murkowski, host of the Watchdog of Wall Street podcast and founder of Murkowski Investments.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, crunching the numbers. A new poll sheds light on how Americans donate their money. We'll show you who they're most likely to donate to. Plus, a special prayer for the repose of the soul of Pope Francis right here on EWTN and how you can join us. A new poll says a majority of U.S. adults report their household donates at least some money every year to charitable organizations. The findings are from an Associated Press NORC survey. Most donors say they gave $500 or less, below the total for a designation of a major gift. And U.S. adults were most likely to donate to religious organizations or groups. Roughly 25% give money to animal care groups. In the wake of the passing of Pope Francis, the Vatican has released a previously unpublished text of his own on aging and death. In a preface to a new book, Pope Francis wrote in part, quote, "We must not be afraid of old age. We must not fear embracing becoming old, because life is life, and sugarcoating reality means betraying the truth of things. Because to say old does not mean to be discarded, as a degraded culture of waste sometimes leads us to think. Saying old instead means saying experience, wisdom, knowledge, discernment, thoughtfulness, listening, slowness, values of which we are in great need. Finally, tonight at EWTN, we continue to pray for the repose of the soul of Pope Francis, and we welcome you to join us. In just a few moments, right after News Nightly, the Franciscan Missionaries of the Eternal Word will pray Vespers for Pope Francis. Please join us in prayer. We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, Instagram, at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Montse Alvarado. Good night, and God bless you.